All right, are we being set up for war with Russia? Because something is wrong with this 60 Minutes story that ran on Sunday about the death ray. There's a death ray. I'm not sure we should believe that, and I'll explain why. Also, we talked to Carol Roth. She is fantastic today on The Economy. This is really important information that you really need to know. We also talked to Steve Friend about a bill in Tennessee that is giving the power back to the people. Very, very important. And so much more. A lot of it coming out of California, which has gone insane. I know. You thought it was already insane? No, it's getting worse. It's all on today's podcast. First, in case you haven't looked out the window lately and see all the people running around with their hair on fire, our country is in a weird and dangerous place right now. Inflation is crazy and about to get crazier, driving the price of goods and services through the roof. But it's especially troublesome if you're trying to put away some emergency food. That could be a real problem. That's what's great about My Patriot Supply. They have helped millions of Americans prepare for whatever might come their way. And many of them start with a 3-month emergency food kit, which are $200 off the regular price right now. There are 22 food and drink varieties. You're going to get breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, drinks, everything that you would need, 2,000 calories a day. So stock up on all the food kits that your family might need at MyPatriotSupply.com. You'll get each kit for $200 off. Protect yourself. Protect your family. Get your kits at MyPatriotSupply.com. They ship fast and free. Remember the Gods of the Copybook headings by Rudyard Kipling. There we had plenty of money, but nothing our money could buy. I think that's a money printing thing, and we're doing that like crazy. Stock up now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
There's something else that is bothering me. In fact, can we play from yesterday's clips? Can we play the 60 Minutes former Pentagon investigator says U.S. officers attacked by Russians? This is cut 4. This is really important. Listen to this.
Are we being attacked?
My personal opinion, yes.
By whom?
Russia.
Greg Ed Green ran the investigation for the Defense Intelligence Agency. He would not discuss classified information, but he described his team's work from 2021 to 2023.
We were collecting a large body of data ranging from signals intelligence, human intelligence, open source reporting, anything regarding the internet, travel records, financial records, you name it. Unfortunately, I can't get into specifics based on the classification, but I can tell you at a very early stage, I started to focus on Moscow.
Can you tell me about the patterns you began to see?
One of the things I started to notice was the caliber of our officer that was being impacted. This wasn't happening to our worst or our middle range officers. This was happening to our top 5-10% performing officers across the Defense Intelligence Agency. And consistently, there was a Russia nexus. There was some angle where they had worked against Russia, focused on Russia, and done extremely well. The impact has been that the intelligence officers and our diplomats working abroad are being removed from their posts with traumatic brain injuries. They're being neutralized.
They're being neutralized. And Russia was involved. Cut 2, please, from today.
It was like this piercing feeling on the side of my head. It was like, I remember it was on the right side of my head, and I got like vertigo.
Olivia Troy was Homeland Security Advisor to Vice President Mike Pence. In our 2022 report, she told us she was hit outside the White House.
And then severe ear pain started. So I liken it to if you put a Q-tip too far and you bounce off your eardrum. Well, imagine taking a sharp pencil and just kind of poke in that.
And this man told us he was among the first publicly known cases in 2016 from our embassy in Cuba. That's how the incidents became known as Havana syndrome. He's medically retired from an agency we can't name, blind in one eye, and struggling for balance.
Okay. All right.
It's really weird.
It is weird, isn't it? What do you go away with on that, there, Stu?
On that particular report?
On what you just heard, what do you take away from that?
Russia is apparently attacking our government officials,
right,
with some sort of weapon that not really explained there, but we've heard about Havana syndrome before.
Right.
And it seems to be really affecting people that are hit with whatever this is.
Now let me take you back to 2023. It's a briefing from the State Department. Top three, please.
It has been the broad conclusion of the intelligence community since March 2023 that it's unlikely a foreign adversary is responsible for these anomalous health incidents. It's something that the intelligence community has investigated extensively and continues to look at. We will look at the new information as it comes in and make assessments inside the State Department and with our intelligence community.
You can't confirm whether INR agrees with that in this building?
No, I said we do. They do share that.
You do? Okay.
Okay, wait.
I remember that.
This is
a big story.
Yeah, this is from the Washington Post a year ago. The mysterious ailment known as Havana syndrome did not result from the actions of a foreign adversary, according to an intelligence report that shatters a long-disputed theory that hundreds of U.S. personnel were targeted and sickened by a clandestine enemy wielding energy waves as a weapon. The new intelligence assessment caps a years-long effort by the CIA and several other U.S. intelligence agencies to explain why career diplomats, intelligence officers, and others serving in U.S. missions around the world experience what they described as strange and painful acoustic sensations. Many of the afflicted personnel say that they were victims of a deliberate attack, possibly in the hands of Russia or another adversarial government. A claim that the report contradicts in nearly every respect, according to two intelligence officials who are familiar with the assessment described to the Washington Post. Seven intelligence agencies participated in a review of approximately 1,000 cases of health incidences, the term the government uses to describe a constellation of physical symptoms, including ringing in the ears, followed by pressure in the head and nausea. Five of those agents determined it was very unlikely that a foreign adversary was responsible for the symptoms, either as a result of purposeful actions, such as directed energy weapons, or a byproduct of some other activity, including electronic surveillance that made people sick. They spoke on the condition of anonymity. One agency, which the officials did not name, determined that it was unlikely that a foreign actor was at fault. A slightly less emphatic finding that did not appreciably change the consensus. One agency abstained in its conclusion regarding a foreign actor. But when asked, no agency dissented from the conclusion that a foreign actor did not cause the symptoms, one of the intelligence officials said. Now that came out a year ago. So one would have to ask the government, were you lying then, or are you lying now?
Is it that these are just people within these investigations who are disagreeing with the final conclusion of the government report? Because I remember that report. It was a big story at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a big thing. Like, everyone, for years and years and years, we were told about this Havana syndrome, very suspicious and strange. But no one really knew. And then they came out with this report and it was, okay, this is our conclusion. We came up with it. It wasn't anybody. It was, I mean, they kind of made it seem like these were unrelated sort of general health ailments these people were going through.
Let's go through some of this. 60 Minutes spoke with retired general officer, Lieutenant Colonel Greg Elgreen. Now, remember, he said one agency, or the report a year ago said one agency didn't agree. So let's just say that Greg is the guy who said, I'm not taking a position on this one.
Okay.
He said that Russia appeared to be the common denominator across most cases concerning Havana syndrome. One of the things I started to notice was the caliber of our officers. Okay, remember this? What he just said, our top 5 or 10% performing officers. So let's look at those who were targeted. The investigative journalist also claimed to have obtained an accounting document linked to a top secret Russian intelligence unit called 29155, which outlines a bonus payment for an officer who worked on a project concerning potential capabilities of non-lethal acoustic weapons. When I saw it, I literally had tears in my eyes because it was spelling out what they had been doing, said one of the victims. It's not definitive proof of Havana syndrome cause. It's the closest to a receipt you can have, however, for this. Okay. So who are some of these people? Who are some of the people that were linked? And is it real or a hoax? Let's look at what's happening with the CBS report. CBS doesn't have, and neither does the FBI, have any interest in protecting one of the main sources there that is supposed to be high level intelligence. Nobody seems to care about hiding her identity. Moreover, CBS acknowledges on multiple occasions that the FBI has been in the loop regarding her appearance and talking points on CBS. This means that CBS and the FBI have been working in concert on this story, which leads to a variety of questions about the independence of 60 Minutes in reporting the story accurately without any bias. Remember, the deep state, they keep going to the same sources that have lied to them over and over and over again. Throughout the piece, there's a stunning lack of real evidence that delivers a direct link between the Russian agents, directed energy weapons, and the variety of claimed injuries. Now, is there any link? Are there any questions that should be asked? Well, here's one. Why isn't Moscow using this weapon against Zelensky? Why is there no evidence of Russia using these devices on any battlefield such as Ukraine or Syria? There's a journalist. His name is Hans McAtee. He noticed and spoke on X. He said, it's really important to scrutinize the individual current and the former government agents who claim to be suffering. So who are they? Well, one of them is retired from the CIA in 2019, currently an MSNBC contributor. He was one of the many former government agents who claimed that Hunter Biden's laptop was disinformation. Miles Taylor, another one, wrote the infamous anonymous anti-Trump letter, made a career of leveraging his government credentials to write best-selling Trump-bashing fan fiction. Olivia Troy, she's a former advisor to Mike Pence. She's followed a similar path to Mr. Taylor. And the last one waged the campaign to get social media to censor critics, falsely accused several people of being Russian-controlled accounts. Seems like we have the same kind of people running around. You ever find yourself taking a long look around your house and think, gosh, we've got to sell this place and move, but then having the follow-up thought, yeah, but that's a lot of trouble, because it is a lot of trouble. One of the most important things I learned along the way in my life is you need a really good, competent real estate agent, somebody that you can trust, somebody that understands what you're looking for, somebody who listens to you, but also somebody that has a Rolodex full of the right people that it's going to take, the inspectors, the appraisers, the home repair contractors, the photographers, all of it. Real estate agents I trust, dedicated 100% to pairing you up with a real estate agent that you can trust through the whole process. Whether you're buying, selling, or just have questions, we've been helping this audience for over 10 years and billions in sales. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. The name says it all. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Now back to the podcast. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes. Carol Roth is joining us. And Carol, I sent you a story a couple of days ago about how we are now paying more in interest than we are in, I think, Pentagon spending and Social Security. I have heard that this time was coming for a long time. Are we actually there?
So just to sort of set the stage, we're not exactly there yet. That's the only piece of good news I'm probably going to deliver to you, Glenn. We are on a trajectory, and this is projections that I believe came out of Bank of America. So, you know, a Wall Street analyst came up with these projections and basically said that if we continue with interest rates where they're at, the Fed doesn't cut interest rates this year, and we continue on the spending trajectory, he modeled that out to the end of the year and said this year we will pay $1.6 trillion in interest if nothing changes. And if we were to hit that point, then yes, then it would become the biggest item in the budget, you know, far exceeding what was paid for the military and then even exceeding, you know, all of those other expenses, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the like. So this is the trajectory that we're moving into, and is a very scary one that we've been warning you about because of what is something called fiscal dominance that you guys, you and I have talked about before. Basically, we are in a scenario where we have high debts and we have high deficits and we have inflation that is too high. And so when the Fed tries to do this monetary policy and to raise rates in order to bring down that inflation, it ends up being dominated by that horrible fiscal position of the United States. It means that the interest on the debt explodes. It means that the deficit, because that interest is bigger, widens. It means that we have to then finance those bigger deficits, and that puts us into a vicious cycle. And it's something that many of us have been warning about, and it really looks like we're sitting right in the middle of it.
And it begs the question, why didn't the Fed reset all of the loans when we were at zero? Why didn't we take out all these loans and lock them in long term at zero? We were there for a very long time. Now we have all of these loans that are starting every month. Yeah. They come in and we have to reset the loans, and our interest rate is high. And that, like you said, I just really want people to understand that because we have all of the $34 trillion and it is resetting all the time, different parts of it, we're paying that high interest rate. So what's happening with you and your credit cards is now happening with the government.
Yeah, and what? I have an answer for that, Glenn, because this was something that I was very curious about too. You know, to me, we had near 15 years of zero interest rate or almost zero interest rate policy, and so it would say to you, why wouldn't you go ahead and lock that zero interest rate in forever? And there has been some really great research that I'm following that I will probably reference several times today from Luke Grauman at FFTT, and he went back and he looked at, you know, central bank holdings of treasuries versus how much debt we have increased. And over the last, I think it's 10 years, we have increased, you know, more than $16 trillion in debt. But at the same time, central banks have actually lightened up their reserves. They've sold $100 billion. So the 10 years prior to that, you had central banks that were loading up on treasuries and they were there as a buyer. And now all of a sudden you have this huge buyer that is out of the market. So it doesn't mean that there were no buyers. There's certainly banks and insurance companies and other foreign buyers, but the price that they would have had to pay wouldn't have been zero. And I think that's the reality. And that's an important piece of the discussion that we're having today, is that you know, the federal government, even though everybody else may say, well, I can still get a loan or I can still do this, the federal government is having a very difficult time getting long-term loans in particular at a interest rate that is anywhere near acceptable and that would keep the Treasury market from going into mass chaos.
So here's the problem. They need to keep the interest rate low for them, but they don't have any buyers. And the way you increase the buyers is you offer them more money, in other words, a higher interest rate, and you say, no, look, we'll pay you back, you know, 4%, 6%, 8%, whatever it takes to get people to buy the bonds. Nobody's buying, and if they keep raising the interest rates, our debt completely cripples us. You can't pay the interest rates.
Yeah, this is why I have been saying and still believe that the Fed is going to be forced to pivot. They want to keep these interest rates high in an effort to try to control inflation. But the U.S. government and their rampant spending, their dereliction and their financial duty to be responsible has created that as an impossibility and is now meaning that if you keep interest rates high, that in and of itself will also stoke inflation. So the Fed has been doing a lot of things in its toolkit to become more accommodative. When you talk about lowering rates, it's more accommodative or looser fiscal policy. And while they haven't come out to do that quantitative easing, the straight up buying of the bonds that we saw that brought their balance sheet from a couple trillion dollars up to almost $9 trillion, they've been doing a lot of things that look and taste and feel a lot like that. In Jerome Powell's last press conference, he's basically said our policy of taking letting the assets on the balance sheet run off, we're going to slow that down. So now they're going to still be in the market buying a little bit more. And the last thing that they're holding out on, because remember, it's an election year, is lowering that interest rate. At some point, that's going to be the only thing that they have left other than just, you know, a wholesale buying of bonds program. And they're going to have to do that. And what that's going to do, boys and girls, this is the important thing, is that is going to restoke inflation. Anybody who is an asset holder is going to see their assets melt up, continue to rise in value, and the middle class, the working class, is going to continue to get crushed because this is the basically one of the only things that they have available to them, or certainly the only one that they're going to be willing to enact, is to inflate the debt away.
Well, that's happy news. So what does the average person do, Carol? Buy stuff now?
It is a really tough question. It's one that I have multiple times on a daily basis. And, you know, it's a horrible scenario that we have to be in this discussion and worry about the American dream slipping away because we know asset prices have already increased. And so I do think that if you are in the middle and working class and you're worried, you've got to do everything you can to try to get your expenses down and to live and with as much austerity as you can to have some money to put them into a diverse portfolio of assets. You know, things like hard metals, you know, the gold and the silver, some stocks, you know, real estate to the extent you can. And I know that I can just hear right now, Glenn, people are yelling and saying, but Carol, I can barely afford my rent or my mortgage or my groceries. And I understand this is a horrible, horrible position that the government and the Federal Reserve has put every American into. And we just have to do the best that we can to try to hold on to something to preserve some level of wealth, because this is what we are facing, because we don't have the fortitude of politicians who are willing to do the hard work. They weren't willing in the Biden administration to go through a small, a longer term recession. We had a tiny recession, but to make that a little bit longer term to help normalize us, normalize things and get some breathing room. And I think that politicians are going to continue to act like politicians. So you have to be prepared for that.
So Art Laffer told me years ago when we were talking about the interest rates, and I said, if we keep just printing money like this, there's going to come a time where you have to raise the interest rates. And, you know, I said, Art, when you did it, it was, you know, 18, 19% interest rates. And I said, you can't do that to the economy in this scenario, can you? And he said, no, it will stop the heart of the economy. It just collapses at that point because it's too weak. You can't, you everything stops.
It's a different time. This is what people need to understand, because they're going to go back and look historically at other periods in the United States and say, well, this is what we did then, and this is what we did then. But it's different now. We don't have that luxury because we have debt to GDP that exceeds 120%. We have the balance sheet of basically an emerging market in crisis that would have kaputted, you know, a while ago if we didn't have the world's reserve currency, which we know that a lot of folks are trying to get away from. We didn't have $34 trillion in debt and a massive deficit that just kept running and running. We didn't have all of these interest payments that were going to pay for things that we've already bought and not new spending. So we are in a different world here today. And as we've talked about before, you get close to that cliff and eventually you come off and you never know that exact point in time, but we are speeding towards it. Just look at how fast the debt, the deficits, the interest, how fast this is growing, it is starting to spiral away from us.
Stu, do you remember when we had, when we were talking about Obamacare? And I think the government at that point, if they took Obamacare, they would rule about 25 to 30% of the economy. Do you remember that?
I don't remember the statistic, but I do remember the general conversation.
The general conversation, and it wasn't that high. I mean, it was like 30%, and we were like, oh my gosh, it's almost 49% now that the economy is driven, almost half of it is driven by government spending.
Incredible.
And that's what's putting us here.
You are listening to the best of Glenn Beck. To listen to the rest of this interview, check out the full show podcast.
Bill Azaley is with us, California State Assemblyman. Welcome to the program, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Glenn. Thank you for having me.
So you say that California property rights are under attack. How exactly?
Well, California historically has had strong property rights protections. We have this Proposition 13 that was passed by the voters in the late 70s. Mm-hmm. And it did really two things. It limited how much your property taxes could go up. Based on appreciation, it caps it at no more than, I believe, 2% a year. And what that did is it's kept property taxes historically low in California, because when property values go up very quickly, the state would love to reassess the value.
Sure.
And tax it. So that has historically kept us with lower than usual property tax. The other thing Prop 13 did, and this is what's really under attack right now, it said to the government that if you want to raise taxes on the people of the state of California, you need to submit, you need to get a 2/3 approval, either through the legislature or through the voters to raise taxes. And we've had this high bar now for forever. What happens though, and this is what the left does, they never stop and they look for loopholes. Well, the court gave them a loophole and said, oh, but that's a tax initiated or sponsored by the government. If there's a tax proposed by a private person or a union goon, that's not subject to the 2/3 requirement.
Wait.
So
how does the union goon have standing to propose taxes?
Private citizens in California, we have the initiative process. We're a direct democracy in some sense under our constitution. So citizens have the ability to place measures on the ballot. So the Howard Jarvis Association, who initially wrote Prop 13, has now come back with a new initiative and says, no, we're going to close that loophole. It's a taxpayer protection ballot initiative. And guess what? We've gotten the signatures to put that on the ballot and to close all these loopholes. And it will ban things like they're doing now. They want to do income-based electricity prices. So the more money you make, the more they charge you for electricity, all this crazy stuff. So we got this on the ballot. How do the Democrats respond? They're putting a competing ballot initiative that says if you put anything on the ballot that raises the threshold to vote, so from majority to 2/3, your initiative has to pass by 2/3 vote. And this is a poison pill. And that's what the legislature has put on the ballot now. So they put that on to try to kill it. So it's very difficult to pass a constitutional amendment on 2/3, which is what this is. And at the same time, Glenn, they've gone to the California Supreme Court they've made some, they're not even coherent arguments to get the court to take off our ballot, our taxpayer protection initiative off the ballot. That's what the left does here in the state of California.
So wait a minute. So what's on the ballot? What is on the ballot?
There are two competing initiatives. The first is our initiative, which is the good one. It's going to close the loopholes.
What is the proposition number?
They won't give us the numbers yet, so I can't even tell you. You'll have to have me back. They play all kinds of games to make it hard for us to campaign. So we don't have the numbers yet. We will get them sometime this year. The second initiative is one put on by the legislature, Glenn, and that says if you're going to raise the threshold to raise taxes, your initiative on the ballot has to pass by the same number, by the two-thirds number. Prop 13 didn't even pass by two-thirds. So this is the type of gamesmanship that they're more than happy to do here in California, because it's all about serving their party. It's all about getting more money to the state, and the people be damned.
How much does the state need? Because you had a surplus. You've blown through that. Now you have a deficit, and if they can just continue to raise taxes, they will. They will, and they'll drive everybody out of California.
Our budget is totally out of control, Glenn. Last year was about $300 billion, which is about double than what it was in the previous decade. So we have plenty of money, but what happens is when they get a windfall like the COVID money, we got $100 billion surplus. As a business person, you would say, well, that's not money we could expect to get every year, right?
Right.
So we would do maybe one-time spending or put it in the reserve. No, they spend it on ongoing programs that are not sustainable. So now we're facing that. We have, according to the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, he says, oh, it's only about a $38 billion deficit. Well, the legislative analyst office, who does tend to be nonpartisan, says, no, it's actually $73 billion. And we have a budget deadline, Glenn. At the end of June, we have to pass a balanced budget. These Democrats up here are in total denial. They've not cut anything. And these people we've had up here because of term limits have never been here to cut any. They've never cut anything. They barely cut their hair. So I don't know what's going to happen here in June, but we have a financial cliff. And I think they will be more than happy to raise taxes than to cut any of their precious programs. Passed.
Can we talk about the other erosion of property rights, and that is the home squatters?
Yes.
This is nuts.
Yes. It is nuts. So this goes back. You have to understand neo-Marxism. I call it neo-Marxism because it's a new thing now. They don't talk about Marxism. They talk about people who are oppressed and people who are
correct.
Who need help.
Correct.
And so now the people who need help, Glenn, are the renters. The poor renters who are being taken advantage of by the mean, greedy landlords who keep raising rent. And so they've built in all these protections that make it very impossible to kick people off property who are not paying rent, or let alone they're just squatters. They're people who showed up and moved in. And the police will not lift a finger because the laws are written in such a sense that you have to go to court to evict even a squatter. And good luck. It takes months to go through the court system. And for a while, during COVID, we had an eviction moratorium for over two years. You couldn't even go to court to get an eviction. And it all, there's two ways to seize property, Glenn. It's either through force through the government, or in this way, they're letting the people that they've deemed to be oppressed to seize the property of other people. And they don't care. I mean, we have in the legislature very unserious activists who run the legislature. They're not serious people. They just formed, and it's embarrassing. They formed the Renters Caucus because they're proud of how many legislators in the state are renters. They're not even home. These are adults. They've never had a mortgage, and they're proud to be renters, and they're going to look out for the other renters. That's the people running this place.
God. I don't know. Have you heard about the rapid transit system with the new cards? BART.
I have not heard this.
Okay, BART on Friday. This is for Northern California, Bay Area, rapid transit. BART on Friday posted instructions on ask for these new cards. You can ask any station agent for BART's free bystander intervention cards, which you can use if you're experiencing or witnessing harassment in stations or trains. Apparently, the post includes a video featuring two female college students who ride BART and explain how the cards work. When the riders are being harassed, they hand out the "You Got Me" cards as a request to help. When riders believe they're witnessing others being harassed, they can hand out the "I've Got You" card to the perceived victim. Now, I don't know exactly what these cards are supposed to do, and I don't know if I'm being beaten up. I don't know if I can reach into my pocket to get my stack of "Do you have me" cards. I mean, the people in California have gone insane.
I've said it, Glenn. They have unserious people up here running the legislature. Most of them are former union activists. A lot of them are former staffers. They're people who've never done anything in the real world. They're here to serve the state, not just Democrats, by the way. That's on both sides. So we need serious people to step up to run for office. That's one of the reasons I ran. I gave up my job as a prosecutor to come up here and serve. And I bring the perspective of the people. And I don't, you know, when I'm in these meetings, they said, "Oh, but we have to fund this agency or they're going to lay off." I go, "I don't care. We don't have the money. Defund them. I will not vote for the budget because it is not balanced." And I'm one of the few Republicans who votes no down the line on the entire budget. And the others, you know, they're afraid of being called names because there might be a nice program in there that, you know, helps people. I don't care. But we need serious people in office to take control back of our government. It is the senior staff and these activists are running the joint here in California.
So what is the plan for these people who don't want to cut the budget when you have a balanced budget amendment?
You know, Glenn, this is a good question. I don't know what they're going to do because, like I said, we have a deadline in June and they're going to have to make tough cuts. Now, one thing that came on my radar is what Senator Paul introduced an amendment in the Senate that did not pass, but it really raised alarm flags for me. And he had an amendment to ban the feds from buying up state debt. So can the feds intervene and buy up the state's debt? Because I'll tell you, the people up here do not walk around with any concern. I feel like something's up. But in 2008, we learned an important lesson, Glenn, and there were some entities are too big to fail. And if we bailed out the banks, do we really think they're not going to bail out the states? So I don't know, to answer your question, but I'm very suspicious.
If they bail California out, I think you're going to hear voices from all over the country. I mean, I've always wanted to live in California, but the people there are so insane that they wrecked living there because of all of their stupid, impossible schemes. And I just couldn't live there because I'm not paying that kind of tax for things that are not going to work. And if you guys pass on your debt to us, oh my gosh, I'm going to have a really hard time paying my taxes. Really hard time.
I don't blame you, but this is what I worry about, because they feel at the end of the day the feds will be there to bail them out. Uncle Joe will come to their rescue. It is sort of the vibe I get up here, but I don't have any direct knowledge. They don't include me in any serious conversation in the supermajority. But go ahead. This is the symptom when you have a supermajority government, a party that is totally out of control, the Democrat Party here in California, and they serve one thing, their own power and their own party. It is party over country, and I see it firsthand. And people really need to make a change. And I advocate in California, what can Republicans do? I don't like to be always down in the dumps. And I said, we got to learn from the Democrats and how they win elections. We don't go run on a 10-point plan that with all these nuances. We got to pick an issue in California that is wildly popular and that's emotional and it resonates with voters. The Democrats pick abortion. I personally think the issue of Republican voters should be parental rights. They are mm-hmm. coming for your kids. Mm-hmm. They want to indoctrinate them. They're going to transition them at school. They're not even going to tell you. They're going to let your girl get out-compete by a boy, and they're going to medically sterilize your kids. How can anyone stand for the sterilization of children? We're going to look back at this, Glenn, and say, what the hell were we doing? Sterilizing children. And that should be the issue of the Republican Party. It's been a tough sell to the party bosses, but I'll tell you, at the grassroots level, it really resonates.
Yeah, of course
it
does.
I think that's our issue.
Of course it does. Don't listen to the party of these Republicans that are running things are just the biggest dopes in the world. They continue to lose time and time again and then say, well, it's because we didn't do it, you know, right enough. Well, that sounds like a Marxist on why it always fails. Bill, thank you so much. Bill Isaly, he is a California State Assemblyman. Keep up the hard work. God bless you. I don't know how you stay sane.
No, thank you, Glenn. Happy to be here. And if anyone wants to follow us, they can, as Bill Isaly, on our social stuff. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. By the way, it's spelled Essayli. What a California way to spell you, Isaly. You should find an easier way. I mean, I know it's your name and everyone, but give us a break, man. Na, 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 na.